If you can't make it to a polling place on election day, the next best thing is sending in an absentee ballot. But it's not always so cut and dry. River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters, sitting in for Ben Kiefer. As of now, an absentee ballot is counted in Iowa as long as it's postmarked the day before Election Day. But some post offices have neglected to postmark ballots, and that means they're just getting thrown out. Lawmakers are working on legislation to ensure absentee ballots get counted properly. We'll delve into the issue on this Legislative Monday. Conversation right after these headlines. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Good afternoon. I'm Clay Masters in the Law Library at the State House, sitting in for Ben Kiefer today. Coming up on the show, a conversation with State House reporters about the legislative session and some of the things that possibly could keep lawmakers here way past the normal adjournment. But first, right now, an absentee ballot is counted in Iowa as long as it's postmarked on the day before Election Day. They have to be received by the commissioner's office by the following Monday to be counted. Now, this means that ballots go uncounted if they're not properly postmarked, and that means multiple county auditors have said it's an issue. It's also creating some logistical issues if the ballot shows up late and it's a tight race. For instance, Wapello County was sued in 2010 because there was a close race and ballots were not postmarked. Now, lawmakers are addressing this issue this session to make sure it's handled properly. And I should say on a side note, too, a recent report from iowawatch.org says Democrats and older Iowans would have to adjust their early voting habits the most if a bill that requires absentee ballots be in county auditors' hands by poll closing time on Election Day. Republicans, too, would see an impact, but the report shows more of that party vote in person on Election Day with more frequency. Now, we'll get into the nitty-gritty of that and what's being talked about by lawmakers here in just a moment. But first, let's introduce the people sitting around the table with me in the State House Law Library. As she is most Mondays, our very own State House correspondent Joyce Russell is here, as is State Senator Jeff Danielson, a Democrat from Cedar Falls and chair of the State Government Committee, where the matter will be decided. Also, Representative Guy Vanderlinden, a Republican from Oskaloosa. Welcome to River to River.
Hi, Clay.
So, Joyce, we'll start with you. Give us a little bit of background on this issue here. What have you been seeing as you've been reporting on this here at the State House?
Well, as you just described it, there's a problem with absentee ballots not getting postmarked and the county auditors wanting something to be done about that. And the House passed bill, as you just described, just kind of gets rid of the postmark issue and just says all the ballots have to be in there by Election Day. And the debate was very partisan. I don't remember the vote. I think the vote was quite partisan. And now the Senate is taking a slightly different approach. I shouldn't say slightly different approach. The Senate's taking a different approach.
Okay. What are your thoughts? Give us a call, 1-866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also weigh in on Facebook. So, Representative Guy Vanderlinden, tell me a little bit about what the House plan is here.
Well, the House plan was really in response to the auditors. They were concerned that we were getting a lot of ballots that were not postmarked that arrived in time under current law and therefore didn't get counted. And so their solution to that was say, let's forget about postmarks since the Postal Service seems unable to consistently postmark things. And just say if the ballot arrives by Election Day, we'll count it. And if it arrives after that, we won't. And that seemed to the House to be a reasonable way to look at it. And that's pretty much what the bill we passed.
All right. On the flip side here in the Senate, what's the legislation looking like, Senator Danielson?
Well, first of all, it's good to be with you. And it's good to have this conversation because it is a problem that we need to solve. We currently require the postmark. And our law is flawed in that sense because it's not guaranteed. But we also in the Senate don't want to disenfranchise anybody, either on the front end or the back end. And we believe that as long as there's a clear chain of custody for that ballot, even if it doesn't have a postmark, that it should still be counted. And therefore, safety and security is our consideration as well. But we think we can go a little bit longer and make sure that those ballots, through no fault of their own, of those voters are counted as well, too.
What are you hearing as far as why these are not getting postmarked? What's the holdup in these offices?
Well, it's the type of mail, the size of the envelope, the process that the postal service uses. They can't guarantee that they're going to actually get the postmark. So it's actually a function of technology over time, the way the postal service does their business differently today. And there's also examples where post offices are co-located with the county courthouses, and some of those officials have just walked them over. And so we had testimony of that as well. And so, you know, a couple of different considerations that we need to think of in order to improve the current law. And anything we do will create a consequence. And so I think it's important to note that. No matter what we do, the voters are going to have to adjust and understand in order to get their vote counted, they're going to have to follow certain rules.
Should this be a post office's problem?
Well, I think the problem in the law is that we've required the post office to under our law, have the postmark in order for the ballot to be valid. So I think we should remove that consideration. I do think everybody's in agreement. We have to solve the postmark piece, and requiring it today is probably not the best policy.
Representative Vanderlinden, how do you come at that question?
Well, I think when the law was originally put in place, we could count on the Postal Service to postmark these things. As the senator suggests, they probably had a change in technology as opposed to being just incompetent, but it really doesn't make any difference. The fact is that they are not consistently postmarking ballots, and therefore we can't use that as a criteria. And I agree with the senator, we're going to have to just come up with a better way. The House version, as I said, just took the recommendation of the county auditors, which we thought was a good thing because those are the guys who actually probably have the most hands-on experience with ballots and what's the most efficient way of handling them. So that's kind of why we went the way we did.
Joyce, do you want to jump in here?
Representative Vanderlinden, the way it is now, it's pretty lenient, actually, as far as counting these absentee ballots, as long as it's postmarked the day before the election. You can actually arrive a whole week later, right?
That's correct. The other side of that equation, unfortunately, is if your ballot was mailed in plenty of time and for any reason did not get that postmark and arrived after election day, it doesn't get counted. And the auditors did ask counties to say what the scope of that problem was. They got responses from about half the counties. There were some nearly 5,100 ballots that were not counted simply because they were not postmarked. And those people were thereby disenfranchised. And the House version would eliminate that. It would say, you got to get your ballot here before Election Day or on Election Day or before, and it will be counted, whether it's postmarked or not. And we think that's a good way to do it.
I read that another facet of this that I wasn't aware of, if you want to make sure your ballot is postmarked, you can actually take it to the post office and watch them stamp the postmark on there. Is that right?
I actually don't. You know, in some post offices, they'll probably let you do that, but they have other business they're dealing with, and so I just don't think that's a practical way to guarantee your vote, honestly. Most folks are not going to do that, and so that's probably not a good policy statewide.
I also, we have on the phone right now the county auditor for Wapello, Kelly Spurgeon, is on the line right now. Kelly, are you there? You're on River to River.
Hello?
Hi, Kelly, you're on River to River. Can you give us a little bit of background as to what happened there in your county?
In 2010, we had a close race in one of the Senate races where I think there was like a difference of like probably less than 20 votes. And we had received some absentee ballots in the mail the day after the election. And one of the candidates come up and challenged those ballots, stating that one of our supervisors had returned them to us over the counter. Or actually what they had wanted to look through what we got in the mail. And there was several, I would say 4 out of 9 maybe, that did not have a postmark. And at that point, they had stated that one of the supervisors had brought them into us and handed them over to the counter, which had not happened. So they got an injunction and had taken us to court that same day. And we, out of all the ballots that were not postmarked, there was only one that was for that Senate district. And the judge ruled that since our administrative rules was not the same as the Iowa code, that we would not count that one ballot or count any other ballots that would come in the mail only for that Senate district. Now, the rest of the districts that was on the ballot that time, we could go ahead and open the ballots just like we everybody else in the state of Iowa was doing, that if it didn't have a postmark, we could open the return envelope, and if the voter had signed and dated it before Election Day, then we could go ahead and count those ballots.
I'd like to ask both of you, that seems reasonable to me, that is, you know, if regardless of the postmark, if it arrives late and you open it up and it was signed, affidavit signed the day before, you know, in time, it seems like that should be enough.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. The problem is that the court said no, so we're kind of stuck.
Right. And so it's a catch-22, and it's the function of an old existing law given the new conditions. And I actually think there's a solution to it, and that's why I'm happy to be able to work on it.
Kelly, you were trying to chime in there. Was there more that you wanted to say about that?
No, it's just that, you know, of all the ballots that we did get after, you know, the election, there was only one ballot that we did not count, you know, and so it really didn't change the results of the election, but just because they weren't postmarked. And I had went and talked to the people at the post office to say, you know, here's what's going on. Can you guys tell me your process on what you do? Well, they get postmarked, they do, and if they don't, they don't. And then we would get a lot of envelopes back in the mail that didn't have a postmark, but the post office just took an ink pen and wiped through the stamp. Just made an X through the stamp so that we couldn't reuse the stamp, and that was the purpose of them doing that. But it didn't have an actual date that we received or that they had received it.
So are you glad to see that lawmakers are addressing the situation in this legislative session? And what do you hope ultimately happens?
Right. You know, and if it comes down to, you know, where you have to have them to us before the polls close on Election Day, you know what? I'm for that. I just want something kind of cut and dry and not, you know, well, if it's this and it's that, you know, and if it has a postmark, it does, but you can't always read them either. So, you know, if we know we have them there by the time the polls close, then there shouldn't be any questions on anything that we receive afterwards.
All right, Kelly, thanks.
So, you're Senator welcome. Danielson, the Senate bill then would tell us what the Senate bill would do.
Yeah, this almost has the flavor of the school start date debate, right? Which day do we actually settle on? The Senate version simply takes the House version and adds one more step to it, that if the ballot does come in after Election Day and there's a clear chain of custody for it, that we still count that one too.
But it has to be the day after the election, as I read that.
I think
bill,
we go
not?
One extra day.
Okay.
Previous versions, last year we were really close to solving this, by the way, which I think it's worth working on this year. Previous versions have went a little farther into the week. But at some point, there'll be a cutoff. We just want to make sure that if there's a clear chain of custody, through no fault of that voter, that we still are able to count that.
So where's the room for compromise here? How are we going to, is it going to take arm wrestling, or what's it going to take to settle on a day?
No, Representative Van Der Linden and I work on a lot of subjects together, and he's a capable, responsible chair of state government, as I am in the Senate. And so I think it's worth still discussing. Let's say we don't resolve it this year. I just left a meeting with the Secretary of State's office, and we are going to commit to sitting down and coming up with a solution. We have to solve it. We're relying on the Postal Service process today, and it's not working.
Joyce, is there something that you wanted to jump in there?
Oh, if we have time, maybe just talk about other election issues that are out there this year in state government.
Happy to.
Representative Van Der Linden, anything else that's election-related in your
I think that's
committee?
The only live round left. We've had some other things talking about voter registration, but I don't think any of those bills survived the process.
Yeah, I don't think so either. The Senate's passed a couple of other elections issues that the auditors have asked for. We're still working on online voter registration. The Secretary of State has a significant budget request, up to $900,000 for some new technology that will help online voter registration become a possibility in Iowa. So we'll still work on those issues. And I really enjoy working with my colleague on the other side of the aisle.
I guess I would ask here about bouncing back to absentee voting. It's seen more as a strategy used by the Democratic Party than by the Republicans. Do politics factor into the evolution of this bill at all? Do you guys see that?
Well, people make their own political judgments about who it benefits. We deal with that with elections law and a number of other policy areas. My message to everybody in Iowa is do not procrastinate if you're going to vote absentee ballot. Today, don't procrastinate. Tomorrow, whatever we change it to, don't procrastinate. But look, I would have lost under the House version of the bill. I won by 22 votes. I was down 90 votes on election night. And by the end of the week, those absentee ballots came in and they were counted. So it's not fair to the voters who've done everything they thought they could do and not have their vote counted. And I think there's a solution to some of those trailing ballots that come in. And I go the security side of that. If there's a clear chain of custody, let's count it. If there's some question, then it shouldn't be counted.
Representative Vander Linden, how do you come at it?
Yeah, let me answer that comment first. I don't think, Senator, you would have lost if the law had been different. If people had realized that under this new law that they had to get their ballots in by Election Day, I think your 90 votes probably would have arrived on time.
I hope so.
I do, too. as your comment about the Republicans versus Democrats on absentee ballots, I think that used to be the case. The Democrats had an advantage. But in 2014, I think maybe the Republicans actually had an advantage because we finally learned our lesson that this is the wave of the future. I think that probably there were 40% of voters in 2014 that voted absentee. I would venture a guess it'll be well over 50 for the presidential election coming up. So we're going to be in there for absentee ballots.
What do you hear as the most common reason for people voting absentee?
Convenience. Not having to stand in line, not having to worry about the weather or the roads or what can happen in November. Just get it done and know that you've voted. You don't have to worry about it just that one day.
Right. And in many ways, we've modernized the things people do in their daily lives and a number of other aspects, but our elections laws are kind of stuck in the 20th century, so people are responding to that convenience.
So does leaving a large portion of the law in place encourage procrastination, though? I mean, we're talking here a lot about folks waiting till the last minute.
No, the message should be whether we change the law this year or not. I hope we do, but even if we don't, do not procrastinate. And even when we change the law, there's going to be a cutoff date then too, and you should not procrastinate under that law either.
Representative Vander Linden, do you think if this either one of these bills pass, that it will take some kind of education campaign for voters to get the word out there it's not going to be quite as lenient as it used to be?
Yeah, I would count on the auditors and the Secretary of State and the press to say, hey, there's been a change in the law, and you need to be aware of it.
And I actually think you'll change the strategies of the parties. They will change how they go out and collect absentee ballots and get them in based on the new law, just as they do the current law.
There's another issue out there that seems to pop up every year, and I'd like to ask each of you to comment on that. It seems like for a long time, there's been a bill out there to allow city elections, small town, maybe if you're a certain size of town or smaller, that you can conduct your entire election by absentee. Is that something that's on the agenda this year at all?
I don't believe so.
I haven't seen an appetite for that idea.
Why has that not made it? I mean, I know it's been introduced a number of times, part of the omnibus bill from the Secretary of State's office, sometimes standalone bill. What's controversial about that, Representative Vander Linden?
Well, I don't know that there's anything specifically controversial about that. Sometimes issues such as that get tied up in other bills that have baggage that takes them down. I'm not aware of any argument against it.
Would the same kind of partisan stuff get in on a bill like that Democrats would say this is going to hurt us more than it's going to hurt Republicans?
No, I don't think that. I think this is a cultural thing. We have the caucus state, right? We believe in showing up and doing meetings and town hall traditions, and so people like to go to the polling place in Iowa, and I don't think we'd want to take that away from them.
What are some other ways are there to improve the voting experience ahead of the 2016 presidential election? Will innovative systems be considered this next legislative session ahead of 2016?
Well, certainly the Secretary of State is looking at an online voter registration method, which he is pretty closed-mouthed about, at least with me at the moment. But he seems to think that by using records that the Department of Transportation already has, that we could accomplish that. So I'm hopeful that turns into something that we can use.
Senator, you're nodding.
Yeah, I agree. The online voter registration, remember, it's online registration, not actual voting online, is a way that we can improve the front counter service, and that would speed up the actual polling place and then increase the accuracy of reporting as well, because we're able to track those databases across the precincts, and then the Secretary of State can have a uniform reporting system. So stay tuned. Technology will improve Iowa's elections in the next year or two.
And what are the things working against that bill? It seems like this is also at least the second year that there's been a bill out there to have online voter registration. What's the holdup there, Representative Van der Linden?
Well, I think one thing is we've got a new Secretary of State, new in the sense that he was just elected, but he's hardly a rookie. And so I think, certainly from my point of view, I want to get his input before I sign on to anything. And he's asked that we maybe wait until next year.
Senator?
Yeah, he wants to get it right, and we all do. So changing a system like that, you want to make sure that it's foolproof, safe, secure, and efficient. And so he actually is going to move forward with his own piece that allows the DOT database. And then the rest of people that don't have that access is the follow-on piece. And so we're working with him. He actually has a budget request, and we want to see that implemented.
But it would still just be new registrations, right? It wouldn't be where you would, if you put this in place, then you have a better database of all your voters. That's not one of the things that's going to happen here. This is just for new voter registration, right?
That's my understanding.
Yeah. Well, having the system in place would allow you to better communicate with the counties. Keep in mind, the 99 counties are the front counter. They're the ones that conduct the elections. Secretary of State is a reporting system and a partner in that. And so anything we can improve through technology ensures all those processes are more efficient and accurate.
One quick question before we have to get going here. Military service members, will they be affected by this absentee ballot bill? It was a question that had come up earlier.
No. They will still have until the following Monday for their ballot to show up. And that's obviously for those who are deployed around the world. And if the U.S. local postal system has some problems, believe me, the military system has some as well.
Yes. Guy was a Marine, I was a Navy guy. Believe me, mail call is important, and there are delays in the FPO-APO system, and we want to make sure an Iowa veteran's vote gets counted through the following week.
Okay, and that's where we're going to have to wrap things up. Thanks so much to my guests, Senator Jeff Danielson, a Democrat from Cedar Falls and chair of the State Government Committee. Also, Representative Guy Van der Linden, a Republican from Oskaloosa. Thank you both for being here. Joyce Russell, you're going to stick around for the second half of the show.
Okay.
It's River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. It's River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. Good afternoon. I'm Clay Masters, sitting in for Ben Kiefer today. It's Legislative Monday, and we're live in the Capitol Law Library. Now, the biggest issue here at the Capitol that could keep lawmakers past the May 1st deadline, now that's when expenses for lawmakers are cut off, would be education funding. Republicans who control the Iowa House and Democrats who control the Iowa Senate are still pretty far apart. Now, with me to discuss this and other issues still ongoing at the Capitol are a few State House reporters. First, Catherine Lucy, a government and politics reporter for the Associated Press. Welcome back, Catherine.
Hey, Clay.
Aaron Murphy, who writes for Lee Enterprises. His work can be read in papers published in Sioux City, Mason City, Waterloo, the Quad Cities, and Cedar Rapids. Aaron, welcome.
Thank you, Clay. Good to be here.
And back for the second half is our very own Iowa Public Radio State House correspondent, Joyce Russell. Welcome back to the second half, Joyce.
Hi, Clay.
So, Catherine, we'll start with you. Bring us up to speed a little bit about what's been going on in these education funding debates over K through 12 schools.
Well, this has been the issue that's been dragging out the session, as you said. Both sides, the House Republicans and the Senate Democrats, really cannot come to any kind of agreement on a number in terms of how much new money to provide to K-12 education. In fact, the last few sort of negotiating meetings they've had have been pretty perfunctory because no one is negotiating that much right now. The Republicans are holding very firm on their initial funding proposal. They say there just isn't the money in the state to go any higher. Democrats initially started at a much bigger number, have come down a couple times, but they still have a long ways to go. And I guess what we're going to see this week as schools get closer and closer to needing to do their budgets or finish their budgets is if they can actually, you know, make a deal.
And so are we talking about the coming school year? Or
yes.
So this is something that is coming right in the face of the students, the teachers, the staff at the schools.
That's right. It's money for the school year that would start, you know, for students in August or September. So.
And Aaron, what are schools saying? What are we hearing from those superintendents that are trying to set the budgets moving forward?
Schools have been pretty clear from the start of this, going way back to the beginning of the session, when the governor unveiled his budget and House Republicans made their proposal on school funding, both set a 1.25% increase over last year's funding. Schools have said that's just not enough. They say they're going to have to cut staff, which means cutting teachers. They're going to have to cut programs. They're going to have to, it'll result in larger classes, which they think results in a quality of education that's not as high. So they have had big concerns right from the start. The Democrats have proposed higher percentages of funding that the schools say that's what we need. They've said all along that the Republican proposal is going to cause troubles in their budgets.
And Joyce, as I said to you this morning on Morning Edition, I kind of feel like every morning on Mondays when we check in, I'm a broken record. We keep having the same conversation. What's it going to take for any kind of movement on this?
Well, you know, things have a way of coming together fast sometimes, but I'm not going to predict that on this one. I'm personally making plans to be here until the end of June, which, you know, doesn't happen very often, but it happens sometimes. But I would just add that it's kind of a philosophical difference about the ending balance of the budget and money that's out there available after all the bills are paid. This is surplus funds. It's surplus funds even after a certain legal aspects are met. I mean, the law says you have to set aside a certain amount for a rainy day fund. But there's still, you know, after you've done all of that, there's still $500 million out there. And so it's a difference between the Republicans will say and say and say, we don't want to use one-time funds for ongoing expenses.
I think I've heard that soundbite.
Yes, we have. But I think that the sort of the new twist of this year that I haven't heard the Democrats say in the past is, well, it's been there. We've had that surplus year after year after year.
But it's also not just the one time. The Republicans are holding very fast to a sort of fiscal principle that they are only going to spend within the amount of revenue projected to come in. So that means suddenly this excess fund balance, the surplus fund balance that Joyce is talking about, they suddenly, the way they interpret it, they're not going to use it. So there literally is a fundamental philosophical difference for counting the money. And they can't decide neither side can agree on how much money there actually is.
And the wrinkle that the Democrats have put into that this year is if that surplus is there year after year after year after year, then that is ongoing revenue, right?
Right, right.
Aaron, do you see this as the defining issue of the session? I mean, we had the gas tax that kind of happened quickly, and now there's just this kind of aura of back and forth over the education spending and the funding here.
Yeah, I don't think without a doubt you hit it. The gas tax was the defining issue of the session. They showed, as Joy said, how quickly things can come together when they are so motivated. Once that got out of the way, this really became Project One and has been since and will be until they get it taken care of. It really casts a pall over the whole budgeting process because the education funding is such a large piece of that budget pie. It really makes doing the rest of the budget difficult. So until they get straightened out, like Joy said, we could be here a while.
And the governor addressed this a little bit this morning during his press conference, but he seems to kind of be staying out of it.
Yeah, I think the governor is just saying he's put forth his budget. You know, he has a budget that balances. And of course, his budget and his budgets for the last few years have relied on somewhat on the ending fund balance to balance. But he is, while he'd like the lawmakers to reach some resolution, he's not going to criticize them too much publicly, I think.
And a question that has come up is, okay, are Republicans standing firm on this? Because they've already raised taxes for the gas tax, which many of them didn't want to do. And the governor was asked this morning about that, whether that's going on. And he didn't flat out say, no, that's not going on. He said, that's oversimplifying the situation. So there's kind of a feeling that maybe that is going on.
At what point will there be any kind of horse trading going on here to try to make a negotiation made on education funding? Aaron, you're shaking your head now.
I would have thought that if that was going to happen, that would have been somehow an agreement with the school start date issue that kind of festered a little bit here. I thought maybe Democrats capitulated on that with the idea of, okay, maybe either was actually agreed to behind closed doors, or just symbolically they thought if we do this, then maybe the House Republicans will come up a little bit on funding. Obviously that did not happen. So I wonder if there is anything less. I think this kind of stands out on an island on its own now. I don't know what you guys think.
Yeah, I'm not really sure that they do have to do a budget, you know. So, and as Joy said, I mean, they have to do it by the end of June before the next fiscal year starts, July 1st. So at some point time does become a bigger pressure than it is today. The one thing with budgets is there's a lot of places money goes. There's a lot of different priorities. And so if people want to negotiate, there are places to do that. It's just, as we've been saying, they've been very, they've been so far apart in this issue, and there's been very little give suggested.
Well, and that goes to, Clay, that Republicans, well, Democrats have said, we believe we can do this in a fiscally responsible budget. Without offering any details as to how they'll do that, Republicans have said, show us how you're going to do that, and maybe we'll entertain it. That you can either take that as a genuine response, or they maybe know that Democrats can't do that without using the one-time funds and that their heels are dug in the ground.
Well, and, you know, the Republicans, that with their 1.25%, they say even at that they're going to have to make cuts. Are they saying what those cuts would be? No, they are not.
And this is also something that happens year after year since I've been here, and I'm sure far beyond that. But there's an argument about changing the law, because lawmakers are supposed to set this budget early on, and House Republicans have said we should change that law so we don't get, you know.
It's not just early on. They're actually meant to do it over a year in advance. So the budget for this coming school year should have been set over a year ago. Democrats have made a lot of hay of that. Republicans in the House have said, well, they'd like to change the law, so that wasn't the requirement. It doesn't seem to matter, though. There's no teeth to that law. I mean, they don't. Nothing happens if they don't comply.
And that gets to what you talked about earlier, that it's all part of this philosophical budgeting difference in ideals between the Democrats and the Republicans. Republicans don't think that they should set a budget a year in advance for such a large piece of that funding pie. So because of that, they have chosen to essentially ignore that law and try to get it changed, which Democrats are not open to, at least so far.
And that law goes back to the early 90s at another era of budget reform under Governor Branstad also at that time. But before that, school funding went up automatically by formula. They didn't discuss it. It automatically went up by formula. And in the early 90s, the governor took a lot of automatic spending
off of, you know, not going to be automatic anymore. And that's where this, you know, there's still a strong feeling that education funding is the most important. You should do that. And that's where this law came from. Okay, we're going to take it off automatic, but you can't be making this education funding part of your budget squabbles. You need to get it done in the first 30 days, but it's just been proven harder and harder to agree to that.
How much effect has outside superintendents or schools had on the discussion? I mean, there was news about the Davenport superintendent was making some news about him trying, you know, quote unquote, standing up for his school district. There were, I think, from that same district, kids here with shirts on that said we're worth or we're not worth less. Or how much of that kind of outside, you know, trying to strong arm, how much is that actually doing anything, or is it at all?
I haven't seen any sign of it. I'll let Catherine or Joyce correct me.
I can't speak to if individual members are hearing from their districts, but I think, I mean, all the lawmakers on every side of this claim they care about schools and they want to provide for schools, and they have very different ideas of what that means. The Davenport School District was superintendent was complaining about a specific aspect of the school funding formula, which is pretty complicated to explain. But some of his argument got into this issue of following the law and why aren't lawmakers doing that? It's hard to know how much that is motivating because they haven't finished it yet.
I think it's actually kind of fanning the flames of the partisanship because, you know, it's all schools are a Democratic constituency in a lot of ways, and it's easy for the Republicans to just say these are campaign speeches.
And we should say, too, that the Republicans actually did do one thing a few weeks ago where they tried to change teacher arbitration, you know, bargaining rules through a legislation that they claim would provide districts with more flexibility over their budgets. It passed the House how long did that debate go?
It was nine or ten hours over 2 days.
Yeah, stunningly long debate. But then, of course, it did not advance in the Senate.
So, you know, I'm going to have to ask the inevitable question here, but how long is this going to take? How long are they going to be banging it out? I mean, that's what we just keep writing about week after week, right?
I'll make a prediction here, and this is nothing more than my opinion. Awesome. Don't take this as any fact. This is an insider knowledge. Okay. I think sooner than later, Democrats are going to realize that there is nowhere for them to go with this, and they will concede at 1.25% so the schools can at least get that. And then they'll take the issue out on the campaign trail and remind voters of it. I don't see this dragging out too much more longer, especially as Catherine said, with the April 15th is the deadline this week for schools to have to certify their budgets. I think Democrats will eventually take the medicine, so to speak. Again, just a prediction.
By way of full disclosure, exactly. Just a prediction, right?
And I think actually this is similar to the school start debate in that when the Democrats finally backed off of local control for all the schools, it was sort of like, what else could they do? Because the Republican governor and the Republican House were going in one direction. And, you know, in a way, maybe that's what's happening here, too. They could pass more, and the governor could veto it, because the governor's asking for the same 1.25%.
Well, and also, if they think 1.25% is the best they can do, some people might argue that they should do that as opposed to zero, which the longer it goes, the more likely there is nothing. So,
and that is what happens if the legislature
if they don't
doesn't
pass
anything,
agree to anything. Then there would be no new money at all. So we will see.
So what else are things that we're watching here at the State House? I mean, with education funding, what else is there left to do besides the overall budget? And how are those talks going?
They're not really. Very few budget bills are moving. I think transportation maybe, but by and large, the education funding has really sort of jammed up the works. And there's a few other policy issues that
the anti-bullying one is a big policy one that's still out there. Just news last week that there may be some concern in the House Republican caucus over that legislation. So that's going to be very interesting in the coming days, weeks, to see if that gets brought to the House floor for a debate and then how that debate goes. And that one especially interesting because it has been in its second year now a priority of Governor Branstad, something he's pushed for and really hopes to get done. So that's one of the few big policy bills that's still out there unsettled.
But there's not much funding attached to the anti-bullying legislation, correct?
No, $200,000 for a couple different things. A pilot program for student mentors, for older students to mentor younger students, and then to set up a statewide task force to kind of keep the discussion ongoing so they don't just pass this legislation and then forget about it. This task force would be established with, you know, all kinds of educators, social workers, parents to keep the discussion going on bullying issues in schools.
And then, of course, the gun bill is still out there that has passed the House and Senate in different versions. The House has backed off of some of the more controversial parts of the gun bill, which would have, in particular, it would have eliminated the permit to acquire a handgun. Some of the ramifications of that, no more 3-day waiting period, in some cases no more background checks, and that was really controversial in the Senate. So the House agreed to take that out and made one or two other concessions, send it back to the Senate. And all the Senate has agreed to so far is to legalize gun suppressors. So now sort of the flashpoint on that bill is the part of the bill that says children can handle handguns at any age with adult supervision. So that's going to be hard for Senate Democrats to swallow. And so it's really uncertain what's going to happen with that bill. The Senate can just let it sit there and die, or it can agree to the House version, or it can send it back to the House, which essentially means ending up in conference committee. And I don't really know what's going to happen among those three options.
If this is something that doesn't iron out here and doesn't get taken up and dies, is this, no pun intended, ammunition for the campaign trail as well for Republicans that would have wanted to see this?
Well, the NRA was very active in the last campaign. Knocked off one Democratic incumbent in Western Iowa. I saw some of the campaign literature on that.
Yeah, and it's certainly possible. I'm not looking at the map, but there could be, you know, Democrats in more, you know, sort of evenly divided districts where, you know, this not advancing could be problematic for them. Certainly, it's an issue that's important to a lot of Republicans, and actually not just Republicans. A lot of Iowans, I think, care deeply about gun issues.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It depends on where your district is, you know, and what the issues are to those folks.
One of the big issues to come out of the last legislative session was the medical marijuana bill for a derivative of marijuana for these families that have children with epilepsy to treat this. There were some kind of holes in that legislation. There was talk that something else might get done this session. Where's this going? Medical marijuana? Are we going to see anything come out of this session? More heads shaking no.
It's hard to know if it'll be this year. I mean, I think the bill that was passed last year was very limited and really just, in theory would provide one type of marijuana for people with epilepsy, but the sort of actual process of it is really like labor intensive and sort of cumbersome. So those folks want to come back and amend that. And the proposal is a much broader, you know, medical marijuana bill for, you know, people with chronic illness. There was a demonstration last week and a rally, and it's a really well like organized community. It's not clear it's going to get through the Senate and the House at least this year. I think it might get out of the Senate, but the House I think is probably a pretty heavy lift.
And the polls actually show growing support in Iowa for medical marijuana over the last couple of years. And it's mm-hmm. really pretty broad support growing each year. There's still a very small percentage of people who would, in those polls, that would favor recreational use of marijuana. But it does seem to have the public wind behind it. And so I would say what Catherine said, not this year, but I wouldn't count it out for, you know, sometime in the future.
I agree, absolutely. I think that there are maybe some folks who would like to see this program expanded, are hoping for a Hail Mary similar to what we saw last year with that limited provision. It was assumed dead, and then all of a sudden, literally in the last week or two, if my memory serves correctly, it was late in the session, whenever it was, it all of a sudden got called up, voted through both chambers, and signed by the governor. I don't think that's likely this year because what they're talking about is much more expansive. It would allow for producing and dispensing the medical oil in the state of Iowa, which is a much bigger deal. So I don't see that happening this session. House Majority Leader Uppmeyer has said pretty clearly so far that she doesn't expect that to come up this year. But I agree with Joyce. I think the headwinds, the political headwinds are there, and it's not the last we've heard of this.
And one last question to get to here, and that is just the governor's priorities. We talked a little bit about the anti-bullying legislation. He also had this Connect Every Acre bill that was tagging onto something he had proposed last session. Is the governor going to get what he wanted when he set out to the beginning of the legislative session?
Well, he's going to get some kind of broadband bill. It's not going to have the grant. Apparently, it's not going to have the grants in it that he wanted. His spokesman is still being very positive about that bill, even though it's not going exactly in the direction that he wanted. The bullying bill, as Aaron was saying, really unclear what's going to happen with that one.
Yeah, it's all up to the House Republican caucus at this point. And I think Joyce nailed it on the broadband. He'll get something. It just won't be as full a program as the governor had hoped for.
But we should probably point out he got school start date, which he's been wanting for years, so he has to be happy about
and
that.
The fuel tax.
And the fuel tax, which was a huge bipartisan political achievement.
Even though, as people like to note, that he did not campaign on that one, it did become a priority after the election.
A user fee, not a tax.
Resources for infrastructure.
And that's where we're going to have to wrap things up. Thanks so much to my guests, Catherine Lucy of the Associated Press, to Aaron Murphy with Lee Enterprises, and our very own Joyce Russell of Iowa Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Clay.
Thanks, Clay.
River to River is produced by Claire Roth, Lindsay Moon, and Emily Woodbury. We had technical help today from John Pemble. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Podcasting and on-demand audio is available at iowapublicradio.org. We always welcome your questions and comments. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. I'm Clay Masters. Thanks for joining us.